that is something that I think not everyone thinks about when they think about incident management, that it
Yes.
is really a full cross-functional effort. And so those human skills of communicating and collaborating are just as critical as the technical skill required to resolve whatever issue kicked off the incident in the first place.
Welcome to the Reliability Rebels podcast, where we improve production by challenging the status quo. Your host, Armin Astani from Chirto Modo.
Welcome to the Reliability Rebels podcast, where we explore how to make software and systems more reliable by challenging the status quo. I'm your host, Amin Astani. Today, we're diving into one of my favorite topics, production incidents. And I'm not just talking about the usual acknowledging an alert and opening up a laptop and fixing a problem. Incidents with real business impact require structured management. Who leads the response? Who touches production and when? Which teams need to get involved? How do we keep leadership informed? These are all crucial questions that incident management seeks to answer. But that's only part of the picture. How do we manage the customer experience during an incident? How do we communicate effectively in their language? How do we maintain trust even when their service is down? Engineers, they excel at solving technical problems, but effective incident communication requires an entirely different skill set, one that customer support teams specialize in. That's why I'm excited to introduce Kat Gaines, Senior Manager of Developer Relations at PagerDuty. I met her last year at DevOps Days Montreal, and her talk on mastering incident communications was so insightful that I knew she had to share her expertise with all of you. Kat, welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Amin, for having me on. I am so excited to chat about this more. It's one of my favorite topics, honestly.
Rock on, a total privilege. Before we begin, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Ooh, yeah. So you mentioned that I am running developer relations at PagerDuty. So I guess I'll start there because I've been there for a little over 10 years now. So kind of backtracking. I'm in DevRel now, and I have been for the last several years. My career actually started in technical support, though. And so that's what I was doing prior to PagerDuty. That's the first role that I held there. So that's kind of my background. That's why I like kind of talking about all of these different aspects of an incident, not just the technical remediation, but the communication process as well. And I should also just talk a little bit about who I am outside of work, because I think those things deserve space too when we're getting
Please.
To know folks. Let's see, who am I outside of work? I have two pet bunnies who you can't see them because I have a background on, but they're in my office behind
Awesome.
me, chewing away on their veggies and hay. And I am a baker in my spare time. I like to take on really ambitious baking projects and stress myself out around them, but it's a good kind of stress, you know? And then, yeah, this is my bread and butter, incidents and incident management, incident response. It's kind of what I've lived in for the last decade. And I really love the space and I love talking about it.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah. What is it about tech people and baking?
I
there's a
don't know.
common thread.
Yeah. We have all kinds of like hobby Slack channels in our company Slack instance that are like X duty because we just love the play on the name, right? And the baking duty channel is one where like I'll share things, other people will share things. We just make each other hungry and it's like, all right.
Yeah, that makes sense. And there's also a common thread with rabbits too. There's a DBA that I worked with for a number of years and she had bunnies
Yeah.
and cats. And it's just a common thing. Rabbits appear in tech for some reason.
I mean, baking is incredibly scientific, and so I think that we get drawn to it maybe because of that, because of the process-driven nature of it, the science, the math around it, right? It kind of speaks to our brains, and then, I don't know, you need a soft, fuzzy bunny at the end of the day, especially if you've been dealing with a hard incident, so someone soft
Yes.
and fuzzy to cuddle, yeah.
For sure. I see the utility, absolutely.
Looking to scale your SaaS product or IT department without the usual headaches and costs? Check out Chirto Modo's rapid assessment of production in depth. For a flat fee, you will get a personalized, actionable roadmap to make your systems more scalable and reliable, all based on best practices from top tech companies, and host Armin Astani's practical experience. Here's a real testimonial from a previous client.
As a technical leader, it's like a tangible document that you can give to an engineering team or a product team and be like, okay, here's the recommendations. Go create the stories, go implement those things. You have that direction. So it's just good knowing that you have that document, you trust the source that it's coming from, and it's the right things to do for your company at this time. And it's not just like, I read this blog article on the internet and it tells me to do this. And no, we vetted it with you, and that's valuable.
You can scale smarter, no extra hires needed. Learn more at certomodo.io. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show.
Tell me about your current role at PagerDuty. So something tells me senior manager, developer relations, it doesn't tell the full story. What does this job entail?
Yeah, so developer relations entails our developer advocates and our community managers. Those are kind of the two branches of my team. Oh. So folks listening to this might know some of our advocates. They may, for example, know Mandy Walls, who she's been at PD for a few years now, and she's definitely out there quite a bit. We have a couple of folks who are newer on the team. In Portugal, we have Daniel, and here in San Francisco alongside me, we have Sid. So if you haven't had the pleasure of getting to know those folks, if you're listening to this, you will soon. So please be on the lookout for them. They're the people who go talk at tech conferences, just like I do, around things like incident communications or other incident best practices, kind of just sharing the wealth of knowledge that we have the privilege of having as a company around not just how to use our product, but how do people make these processes make sense in their culture, and how do you make it sustainable? Because we are all going to have incidents, but we don't want it to be the, you know, stress-inducing thing. The thing where I can remember early days of PagerDuty, and I'd have people stop me because I was wearing my backpack, for example, and, you know, say, oh, you work at PagerDuty. And it's, I love you guys, but I hate you guys because you wake me up at 2 a.m. And it's like, yeah, that's a common thread. But we want to increase the love side of it a little bit, because we want to make sure that when you do inevitably get paged by our product, that you at least know what to do and where to go, right? That it's a sustainable process. And we take a little bit of that adrenaline out of the process and make it a little calmer. And then our community team, their names are Miguel and Shenda. They're focused on a few things. They're focused on, folks listening can't see, but I have my Zoom background up with PagerDuty Commons branding behind me. And that is our community forum, where we encourage folks to go talk about not just the product, but again, all of the culture and process stuff. So I'm just going to emphasize that you don't have to be a PagerDuty user to join that forum. We want folks to come talk about anything incident management related, around things that are automation incident related, anything in our wheelhouse. We want the conversation to happen there. We're welcoming it. And then they're also doing things like organizing meetups, making sure that our community gets together IRL and virtually sometimes, and just gets a chance to know each other and make those connections, because community is really the strongest way that you improve process and that you improve culture. None of this happens in a vacuum. And so knowing what other people are doing and how they're doing it well, like even when we met, I mean, and you tracked me down to tell me some really exciting stories.
Yeah.
That were relevant to things I was talking about on the stage in Montreal. That's part of building community too, and saying, hey, I've been through this and I know what it's like and I'm excited to talk about this. That's just crucial to surviving the work we do at the end of the day.
Amazing. Yeah, definitely appreciate you explaining. And it's awesome that you name dropped members of your team and giving them some recognition. I'm sure they do amazing.
They're
work.
Amazing people. Yeah, they deserve to be name dropped. Yeah.
Fantastic. So let's take a step back. I know PagerDuty has been a household name for over a decade now. I definitely have been one of your users for a good number of years. But in case there might be a handful of listeners that don't know what PagerDuty is, what is it?
Yeah. So we've We've expanded a lot in recent years. Our bread and butter is really the incident management functionality of our product. So where you can plug in anything that you're working with, a monitoring tool, anything of that nature that tells you when something is up in your infrastructure somewhere that maybe looks a little bit off. And then you plug that in so that we can send you notifications. We allow you to schedule the right folks to be on call at the right time. We make sure there are escalation paths. That's kind of the core of what we do, and it's still one of the most important things of what we do. But I think we've heard a lot lately of like, oh, I don't know, I didn't know PagerDuty does that in response to some of our other features as well. So, for example, we have a number of remediation capabilities that help kind of streamline making those things happen so that you can ensure that things are happening kind of like clockwork. You don't have to do everything absolutely manually. There's a wealth of analytics and reporting in the product. As with, I think, a lot of companies right now, we're toying with working AI into our product where it makes sense and making sure that it's sustainable. There are just a lot of different things that the product does. It's still mostly centered around making sure that moment of an incident is less stressful, but also making sure that you're connecting the full business, that your whole crew across the business knows what's going on. It's not just engineering looking at PagerDuty kind of in their little bubble, but that your stakeholders are informed too. Your support teams, like we mentioned earlier, for example, are connected. Your executives know where to go to find information, that you can differentiate between different types of incidents, whether it's a truly technical engineering incident, whether there's a business incident of some kind going on, whether there's maybe a security incident going on. We have security teams use our platform too to coordinate incident response. The core of it is incident response, so that's why I talk about that a lot, but there is a lot more that we do across our whole ecosystem too. And so that's the thing, I think, too, if someone listening is like, oh yeah, I know what PagerDuty is, maybe go check out some of our release pages and things like that as well, because you might have missed a few things. And we have a lot of really exciting stuff coming up too, both new features and also just improvements to those core features as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys have changed quite a bit over the past decade.
Been a lot happening. Yeah, we've acquired a few companies over the last few years and just are stronger with that talent and those products and as part of our product. And it's been really fun.
Awesome. Amazing. So you've been there for a long time, so you've been able to experience the growth and how the scope of the product has changed.
Growth on every scale of growth. Yeah. It's been really interesting.
Awesome. So you brought up a very interesting point as you were talking about how in incidents, it's really a company-wide competency now. It's not just, you know, alerting the on-call engineer. When we're talking about incident response, we have to remember that it's a process that the whole company needs to learn how to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely. I used to talk a lot when I was in support about how support is a company-wide competency and your customers are a company-wide competency. Just because you're maybe not directly customer-facing does not mean they're not your responsibility, right? And I feel very much the same way about incidents and incident response, because if you break down the core of what an incident is, it is something unexpected happening that you have to deal with. Yep. I cannot think of a single department or function that doesn't in some way have that happen to them, right? So your HR teams will have things happen to them. Your legal teams, your finance teams will have things happen that are unexpected. These are not the core personas we think about when we talk about incident response, but it still applies to them. And then depending on an engineering-based incident, you may need to involve any of those teams and beyond. So anyone across the company may be someone you may need to involve. Even if you don't see that right away, it's something that inevitably will come up, even if you're kind of like a small company and you're like, oh, our engineering team handles our incidents in a silo and that's great for them and it's always going to be that way. I'd encourage you to check in with reality, because as you grow, the nature of your incidents is going to become inherently more complex, and the scope is also going to be more complex. So you are going to have to start folding in those other teams. You will probably already, at no matter what size you are, have to think about how you talk to your customer facing teams and your marketing teams when something happens, because that external messaging is going on. And that, again, does not happen in a bubble, in a silo, in a status page. And that is something that I think not everyone thinks about when they think about incident management, that it is really a full cross-functional effort. And so those human skills of communicating and collaborating are just as critical as the technical skill required to resolve whatever issue kicked off the incident in the first place.
Amen to that. That is just massive truth. And if you're listening, rewind like a minute and play it back again, because Kat is just dropping truth bombs here. And it's really important that you internalize this, especially in larger organizations. So we've been talking about incident management a little bit since the beginning of this episode, but you have been introducing a slightly different skill set, different competency called incident coordination. So in your words, what is incident coordination and how does it differ from incident management, which is oft talked about in our space?
Yeah, definitely. So the way that I was just saying, incident management doesn't happen in a silo, even if we do think it does sometimes. Mm-hmm. That is really what we are talking about when we're talking about incident coordination. I was, I was actually walking to dinner with my next door neighbors last night, and I was discussing with them some of these concepts. And my pet peeve with how folks often refer to communication and collaboration skills as soft skills, right? I know that we've standardized that term. I know we don't inherently mean anything negative by it, but it frustrates me a little bit because it sort of implies that these are skills that just are something you pick up. It's not hard to learn. It's just something that happens. And if I had a nickel for every person I met who did not have quote unquote soft skills but had technical skills, I'd have at least a few nickels. But they can be a lot harder to teach, I think, than technical skill. And so I started, you probably noticed me say earlier, human skill or human centered skill is something I have pivoted to saying a lot, just to reemphasize the point of having these skills. It is to interact with other human beings. And there is a difficulty in obtaining those skills, especially if you haven't been taught to prioritize that in your career. If you've just been taught that, hey, as long as you produce working code, you're good to go. That actually doesn't cover the whole picture at the end of the day. And so when we're talking about coordination, we're talking about, first of all, just checking in with yourself, your reality of understanding what's going on, making sure that your immediate team around you understands what's going on, that you're communicating effectively. But then you keep expanding that out. Like when I'm visualizing this, I just see a series of circles inside of one another, where it's your immediate team, it's your larger department, it is other departments, it's the full company, it's your whole business. Obviously, at the end of that, it's your end users, your customers, and even beyond your customers, the general public, people who know that you are a business, people who perceive you, people who may or may not make buying decisions in the future based on what they know of your reputation, right? And so that coordination extends all the way out through every layer of those circles, just like the rings of a tree, kind of. And if you haven't intentionally thought about coordination at every single one of those levels, at some point you're going to fail. At some point, you are going to find out that, you know what, someone didn't have the context they needed to get their piece of the response done. That might still be within the engineering team. You may find out that a customer-facing team didn't have the context they needed to communicate effectively what was happening. So they either communicated either, God forbid, the wrong information, or they had to just say something to a customer that any customer-facing team hates having to say, which is, I don't know. And it's always okay to admit that you don't know, but it is frustrating to have to say that when you know you can and should be getting the information, and that should be an open flow of communication. There is always going to be a level where that fails. And so every single one of those moments is a learning opportunity for how do you coordinate better and how you communicate more effectively across different teams and just different people that you're going to impact depending on what you're working on.
Wow. Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. But if you haven't heard it before, you would be completely oblivious to the fact that Yeah, the general public is going to see when an incident takes place. I mean, we see it in the news all the
Yeah,
time. And
absolutely.
right? And that does affect potential revenue not existing. So when you do have gaps, you are leaving money or potential money on the table. Wow, yeah, that's a huge, huge paradigm shift from the typical I got paged, who is point, who is running the incident, who is touching production. It is the free
Yeah,
flow of information.
all of those tactical pieces are necessary to cover, but to really be able to say you're doing it effectively, you have to be thinking about how it fits into that bigger picture as well.
100%. 100%. Yeah, that's a huge perspective shift. So, how did you get interested or introduced to this new way of handling incidents?
I think it really does come from my support background for me. Obviously, it comes from working at PagerDuty for over a decade now, right? That
Oh, yeah.
reinforces it a little bit.
Sure,
But
sure.
I think the fact that that was my career prior to and at the beginning of my time at PagerDuty really emphasized the communication aspect for me. We are constantly learning from our own process, right? Like, we have incidents too. We have really high reliability and we're very, very proud of that. But you can't guarantee 100% reliability for any business. That's just unrealistic. And if you're someone listening who thinks you can, please check it back in with reality and develop good incident management process instead, because you are going to have incidents.
Right.
We have incidents, we have high reliability, we have enough incidents so that we get to learn from them on a regular basis. And that's both in a formal way, in incident reviews, in reflection after the fact, conversation after the fact, and also just the experience of what happens. So if I'm thinking about just, at PagerDuty and when I was running support for a few years, and we had just a number of little tweaks that we had to make over time with how we communicated with the teams who were managing the incident itself. Our team was filling that customer liaison role, updating the status page, ensuring that other customer teams were up to date as well. That's what I generally recommend for folks, is if your support team is down to be involved in the incident response process, please bring them in and have them fill that role. They are going to be the experts in customer communication. They should be filling that role. You can have other teams do it. They're going to be best at doing it though, right? Like, at the end of the day, let's just be realistic. So there was a lot of learning that we did through various incidents we had there. And then just kind of making sure that we were tweaking appropriately. And then even prior to PagerDuty too, I had not worked at any company with a formal incident response process until PagerDuty. But
Sure.
when I got into these things and I was like, wow, this is a whole new world and it's amazing that we have this, right? When I was young and sprightly in my time at PD, I was so mind blown because there were so many moments I had identified in my career prior to that where, God, we could have used this. We really could have used the ability to do this. I'm thinking about the small company I was at. I'm not going to drop any names, but the small company I was at where we had some issues and our support team just wasn't actually allowed to talk to engineering directly. So
Wow.
we had kind of a hybrid, it was in the music industry, that's all I'm going to say. We had kind of a hybrid, like, account product management team who was our connection. And so we'd talk to them about things that were going on, but it wasn't really the product management team the way that I would think of a product management team at PagerDuty or any direct software company, right? And so there wasn't process, there wasn't agile process, there wasn't incident response process, there wasn't anything of that nature. And not being able to even discuss things with engineers made things really hard to resolve because there were bugs, and it was just kind of like, well, we're going to have to wait until we play telephone through like 10 different people and see when it happens. And if we'd had a way to engage our engineering team directly and say, hey, these people are reporting these issues, there would have been so much more credibility around, does our product work? Do our websites work? Can people get what they need out of them? Right.
Yes.
There are a few examples I can think of. I can go on and on, but there are just so many moments where there would have been a lot more ease of access for everyone to get where they were going if there had been some process involved. And so, yeah, when I first just became kind of aware of these things as a concept. I was like, oh yeah, give me more. This is what we need.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. Number one, you had the opportunity to actually practice what you preach, because yeah. You are also a SaaS company. You also deal with incidents.
So constantly.
Right. 100%. Because you have many, 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 many customers. So what you are learning in actual practice in responding to incidents, you are now internalizing and then surfacing to the world at large through the product and as well as through your community and the conversation. That is huge.
Yeah.
That is huge. 100%. That's amazing. And then there's something else I want to remark at, just to take a step back and give our listeners an opportunity to think about. Typically, there is a broken feedback loop in growing tech companies between support and engineering. And I have seen and have grieved over the fact that support has, you know, the gold in terms of if we prioritize and do these things, the customer relationship is going to improve, because they're the place where all of the feedback is coming into. Right?
Yeah.
So just taking a moment and saying, if you don't have a good path of communication and relationship between support and engineering and the product managers that are prioritizing the work, get started on that now. Get started on
right
that
now.
Yesterday. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Huge. Yesterday. That is just one of the core things, because we've been talking about this as the benefit to your users, the benefit to support, right? That they're informed, they know what's going on. No, this is a two-way relationship. There's a direct benefit to you. How do you have any clue what is going on with your users if you are not talking to support? Literally any clue. Don't tell me you have a good relationship with your product manager. You don't have a reliable source on how good of a pulse they have on your customers. That varies quite a lot. And I respect product managers. That's not to say they don't have good customer relationships, but let's just be real. That varies depending on the company, depending on the priorities, depending on how that person interfaces with customers. Your support team sees your customers in their moments of pain, sometimes in their moments of joy too. You know, like we used to have a category in Zendesk just for expressions of love, and we got a ticket in there every once in a while for folks to just be like, we love PagerDuty. And but really they see your customers when they are struggling with the product, and they are so deep into your product too. I think folks tend to undervalue support professionals a little bit, and they don't really understand. You know, I've been on a tear for a few years now about don't talk about support as a non-technical role, because that's just insane. And I also, the hierarchy of talking about roles in the organization as technical versus non-technical and devaluing technical roles is something that just gets my hackles up anyway, but understanding how deep into your product your support team gets. They know your product honestly pretty much better than anyone, better than you even. It doesn't matter if you're building it. They know it better than you, because they're looking at these customers' issues, they're looking at their pain, they're digging into the product themselves, they have test accounts, they're figuring out workarounds, they are sometimes creating some bespoke thing that will help the customer do whatever they want. Like maybe it's something that doesn't happen in the UI, but they're like, hey, you can do this with our API. I wrote a quick little script for you to do it. Things like that, right? They are experts in your product, probably more than anyone else in the company. And so if you don't want that data, I just want you to take a step back and question what the heck you are even doing. Because they have so much insight into what the customer is going through. And especially in the moment of an incident too, like if we just come back to that world, when there's something happening, like, you know, you get paged, you see the logs, you see what's happening from kind of a 1,000-foot view, and you're like, all right, cool, I have to dig into that. Your customer is seeing what's happening in the product. They're experiencing the actual symptoms of the incident. And sometimes you don't actually know what those symptoms are just from what you can see from the internal perspective. And so if you're calling on your support teams or your other customer facing teams even to say, hey, what are customers seeing and experiencing? Please come into the incident call. Please tell us about that. You're going to probably get to resolution a little bit faster, because there might be something going on that you didn't know. And then you are better equipped to say, oh, that's happening. Okay, now I know what to go look at because I heard that that's the piece of how this is impacting our users. And you would have no access to that data otherwise.
Yeah. $1 million insight. $1 million insight includes support
It's
and
so
benefits.
valuable. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
so incredibly valuable. And I am honestly just very, very sick of companies who don't value that. It's been my personal just kind of goal, I guess, that wherever I go in my career, I'm never going to work at a company that doesn't value support as a first-class citizen alongside the rest of their employees. Because why? What are you even doing?
Yeah, I salute you. Support. I've had the privilege of working with amazing, talented, empathetic. Now that's the thing that we easily forget. Empathetic support folks that are working through the workarounds, are understanding the customer needs and frustrations, and partnering with them from like the SRE reliability perspective, because that's the world in which I operate, has been a superpower, right? Being able to meet customers where they are, even though I am a distance away, they're not. So yes, please listen to your support people, engineers and product folks, bring them into the fold, even involve them in defining surface level objectives, get their feet on the roadmap, like they are your partner.
And that's worth emphasizing too. It's not just in the moment of an incident. They should be your partner at all times. You should have maybe a dedicated contact on that team that maybe your group is responsible to checking in with on a regular basis. Bring them into some of your regular meetings, not every single one, but you can bring them into some of your planning meetings. You can have them talk to you about what bugs are out there that we're hearing about and that we're hearing more noise about, because it might be just hidden in your backlog, but maybe it's something that suddenly a lot of customers are complaining about. You can get those insights at any time, and they are more than happy to provide them. In fact, most of the time they're hungry to provide them.
For sure. So let's talk about incident coordination as a role. So I actually know folks at other companies that are incident coordinator. That is their title. Let's say you really want to get into this space. Like, how do you get a job as an incident coordinator? Or how do you create that competency in your existing company? How does this work?
So when you're talking about incident coordinator, I'm also conflating a little bit with incident commander because there's a little bit of a dual role that happens there, right? Your incident commander is still going to be kind of in charge of the incident. They're going to be the person that is responsible for decision making. And so I see it as a couple of different roles that you have your incident commander, and you have your kind of like communications liaison is going to be the other person heavily involved in coordination and communication. So I think for both of those, there's good news and then there's more creative news, I guess, for how folks get into it. Incident commander is pretty formalized, I feel like, in the industry now. And I think it's expected at a lot of places that if you are developing the product and if you're in engineering, you should in some way be involved in incident response. You're probably on call. And then incident commander rolls into a couple of different ways from what I've seen, where you either have it as a volunteer basis. Please sign up. Please come hang out with us. We'll hold trainings and we'll put you on the rotation. We promise it's not scary as long as there are enough of us. That's kind of the asterisk that always sits next to that, right? As long as there are enough people to go around. And then there are other companies that make it a mandatory piece of what you're doing. So you may have it be a formal role where incident response and incident command is kind of your whole thing. If you're at a business that has the ability to do that, to say, we can pay someone full time to not just be incident commander or be one of a pool of incident commanders when it happens, but also to think about process actively all of the time and not be distracted by literally anything else. That's amazing. Go for it. I see companies have trouble justifying that sometimes. That's okay. Maybe you count on reliability and you just aren't sure that the work is there, but at least make sure that a portion of someone's role is dedicated to thinking about how the process happens outside of the moment and also that you know, obviously there are enough folks to get in the rotation. And then for the customer liaison work, it's sort of similar that it may be expected if you're in a tech support role that it's just something that you do or something a portion of your team does. Sometimes those leaders have to get a little bit more creative. So again, back to undervaluing our support teammates. Maybe that team is paid on an hourly basis instead of a salaried basis. And then that gets really complicated with your compensation and people teams, because if you're asking them to work overtime for incident response, you have to think about the pay structure and what that looks like. It's possible to do, and like I've personally done it, I know plenty of people who have done that and figured out a fair and equitable pay structure, but you do have to think about what it looks like. If they're salaried, you can consider making it part of just the job expectations and ensure that the pay reflects that appropriately, right? Just like we often do with engineering teams, but it can be a little complex on that part. And then same thing, if you're not building it into the role, you may have to look for things on a volunteer basis. I don't honestly recommend doing that with a customer liaison role. I think you need to have folks you can count on there, and you usually have a smaller bank of people. And so asking for volunteers is kind of just asking for disaster. But it depends on your team. You know, much larger teams may have an easier go of doing that. But either way, ensuring that there is both opportunity and training available, and that if you're going to formalize the role, that you're really supportive of that role being formalized. I've even seen people formalize the communications liaison role where it's like, yeah, this is kind of your full-time thing. And that may end up in an interesting place where it may fall under your customer-facing teams. It may even kind of roll into like marketing a little bit. I've seen folks go kind of all directions with it. I have heard of some folks who run their incident response function from their support function in their company. And they're the ones who kind of oversee and plan that. And everyone's involved, but they're the ones saying, hey, we're the ones who make sure that the process is where it needs to be. That's really interesting and exciting too. It just is going to kind of depend on, you know, what your org needs are.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've seen in my career the liaison role be formalized, and amazing work has been done in that space. But then also on the volunteer-based incident command, so at Meta, they had a role, not a role like a job role, but like you can join the rotation. It was called IMOC, Incident Management Call. And it was a specialized thing. So they weren't in a rotation for a service, but they were just in the rotation for if someone filed an incident of a certain severity or higher, they would get, they'd be brought in and it'd be like, okay, how can I assist? And sometimes they are the person that is making the decisions about, okay, this person is touching production. They are making this change, as well as keeping the executive team informed on what's going on, ETAs, and just making sure that the organization is aware of incident and flight. No, that's really, really interesting stuff. I've never heard of support driving incident response as like...
I hadn't either until I talked to a couple of folks at, it was like one of the support conferences I attend on a regular basis. But I talked to a couple of folks in the community, and there was someone who was like, oh no, we actually own incident response. And obviously engineering is involved because they're the subject matter expert, the person who has to fix the thing, but we own the process top to bottom. And if you can do that, I go for it.
Rock on. I like that. I think I have to think about that in terms of the advice I give companies now, because
for sure.
Mind blowing idea. Yeah. All right. So let's get to brass tacks here. Let's do a little bit of a scenario. And gain some understanding on what incident coordination and the liaison function, how this actually works. So let's imagine we have a major incident where it has affected a SaaS company's flagship. Thousands of customers are affected. It is a five alarm fire. So when we're talking about incident coordination as a practice, what is their role or what tasks are we performing in this scenario? Just to make sure people really understand what's happening here.
Yeah, so I'm gonna split that back into those two roles that I was talking about
Yes.
earlier. So your incident commander, kind of like what you were talking about with your meta example, it's very similar to how we run things at PagerDuty, that we have a rota of people who are on call for incident commander, not for just one service or one subject, but for the overall decision making, coordination, making sure the right people are involved, basically ensuring that things are running the way they need to, right? So those responsibilities roll into understanding what's going on first, either whether the incident was paged through monitoring or whether someone manually triggered an incident, and either looking at what's going on or having a conversation with the person who triggered it if it was manual, and just getting a lay of the land, just making sure
Yes.
you have a good scope of what's broken, what do we think is going on, what's happening. Trying to get that kind of under control pretty quick, because you want to be able to start communicating pretty quickly once you pull that communications liaison person in. And so the next piece is making sure that the right people are involved. So you should have that communications liaison automatically pulled in, depending on what systems and tools you're using, what automations you have in place. Hopefully you have PagerDuty managing some of this, but that person should be automatically pulled in once there's an incident. And then making sure that once you know which part of the product and which team it belongs to, that you pull in the right person on that team. Again, they should have an on-call rotation of some kind. You should know who your contact is. You shouldn't be fumbling around being like, ah, who's on the mobile team? Who could I text at this time? Make sure that you can somehow organize those things, and that if you're using PagerDuty, that's great, but whatever system you're using, make sure that you know exactly who to bring in and how. That is like the most critical piece of process,
Yes.
knowing who to go to when, and every team having ownership of, hey, here's who our person is right now. And from there, it's going to be following the lead of the subject matter experts who are digging into the issue, telling you what's up, but then making those final decisions. And so we often say that the incident commander has final decision making above quite literally everyone, even the CEO, if they happen to swoop in during the incident and say, I think you should do XYZ. Hey, that's cool, CEO, but have you been building the product? Do you actually know what's up there? Or the nice trick we like to teach people is, if anyone is swooping and doing that who isn't actually supposed to be involved in the incident, it's often an executive, but it could be multiple different people. Just take a beat and say, okay, cool. Do you want to take command of the call? And they will sit with that question for a second. If they say yes, great. Hand the call over to them. They can go wherever they want to go with it. And hopefully they're fully trained in your incident response process. Because if not, it's going to go sideways pretty fast. But most of the time, they're going to realize what that question means. And they're going to say, you know what, Kat? You're right. I'm sorry. I am not an incident commander. I'm going to just step myself back from this. Thanks for hearing my recommendations. But I'm good. Please keep me updated. Which you're going to do because you have that communications liaison in the call. And they're, again, not just updating your external users, but they're updating your internal stakeholders too. Having that good internal stakeholder communication, that's one of the key things that that communications person is going to do during the call before literally anything else, ensuring that those comms are going out, because that's going to prevent that executive swoop and poop, is what we like to call it.
Oh, yeah, heard that
It's
before.
going to. Yeah, it's going to prevent it pretty dramatically, because really when they're doing that, it's because they're anxious. They want to know what's going on. And I guess we're kind of veering into some of the content of another talk I've been giving lately, which is around being an effective leader during incident response, that we all have that kind of anxiety around, oh, I'm going to be held responsible for this because I'm in leadership. I am going to be, if you're like me, if you're just a manager, I'm going to be held responsible by my boss, by higher level leadership. If you are a VP, I'm going to be held responsible by the C-level team. If you're someone in the C-level team, I'm going to be held responsible by the board and the public. And if the anxiety just spirals upward and upward, right? And so it's natural that everyone wants to swoop in and be like, I have ideas. I am a person of authority and I can tell you what to do. And it is also important that you instill a culture where the person of highest authority in the moment of incident response is the incident commander, above literally everyone. Above, I said the CEO, heck, throw the board in there too if you have to. But they are the person who makes the decisions because they're someone who has been trained on the process, who knows where to go, who knows who to pull in, who is ideally close to the product in some way. We do say, I'm going to put an asterisk on that. We do say that anyone in the business can be an incident commander. So if you are enabling that, just make sure that they are getting trained fully on the different areas so they do know who to pull in. But they are the expert in that moment. And similarly, that communications liaison that you've put in that role and on that rotation is the expert in both internal and external facing communication. So they should be empowered to fully own those roles without anyone in leadership jumping in and saying, hey, I have ideas, go do them. No, that person needs to sit down, reflect a little bit on why they feel the need to insert themselves on things that are honestly below their pay grade, and go do something that matters for their job description.
Yeah, that's huge. You ask the chief surgeon to make the final decisions on a person's life when they are in a critical place, not the CEO of the hospital.
Yeah, exactly.
That it's the same principle. This is not a foreign idea. And on that note, so you were talking about like management trying to get involved and it isn't necessarily productive. What other common breakdowns have you seen or anti-patterns have you seen in running incidents that you've noticed and are trying to manage or have managed in the past?
Yeah, that's a really big one. I touched on a little bit, but the communications breakdown is obviously a really big one too. Either failing to publish an update internally. So you have, you know, maybe your sales team is like, hey, my customers are reaching out to me reporting something and I don't know what's up. That's something you want to get on really, really fast. Also on the communication side, another breakdown I've seen is going over the heads of your customers. And by that, I mean, not that your customers are stupid, they don't understand your product or what's going on, but knowing your audience and knowing how to communicate with them. So for example, we all have a lot of internal terminology that we use all the time. There is an absolutely frustrating just sea of acronyms out there that we all get used to, but even sometimes between departments, I find myself going, you just use that acronym and I have no idea what the hell that means. Could you please break that down for me? I've seen people in the past try to create like wiki pages with a description of like every PagerDuty acronym that exists. And it's just like, that's noble. You're going to fail, but I love that you're trying because everyone has so many bespoke ones that they have across their teams and departments, and then not to mention the company-wide ones, right? So whether it's acronyms or whether it's like, you know, a lot of us like to use cutesy code names for launches or for different product teams or even for pieces of our infrastructure, right? Where it's like, oh yeah, you know, that one thing, you know, the elephant service or whatever it is. And it's just like, what the hell does that actually mean and map to in the product? Making sure you keep that terminology out of external communication, but also making sure that above all, you're prioritizing what is impacted in the user experience. What symptoms are they going to see? That's where I've seen breakdowns where it's just like, okay, cool. You gave me maybe all the technical jargon around what you're working on. I don't actually understand what that maps to in the product that I'm using and the buttons that I'm clicking today. So how am I going to know what to be looking out for? And you, again, you want to leverage your users and their experience during an incident. You want them to report symptoms to you. You want to hear what's going on. So if they don't know what to look for, how are you going to get that data? That's one of the bigger pitfalls I've seen, just the lack of shared language in communication.
Yeah, that's huge. I remember you talking about that at length quite a bit in your talk last year. So I'm glad that you shared that. I remember a couple jobs ago, there was this process where support takes the postmortem document that I wrote, and then they translate it into customer's language.
They didn't copy paste,
you know, what the engineer wrote into the customer missives. They're like, okay, we need to get this in their terms so that they understand and they feel empathized with and understood. And right.
So exactly.
Huge. That's a huge, huge, huge thing.
Right. And that happens a lot where, you have the engineering team responsible, write the internal postmortem document, and that's great. Everyone's on the same page there. But then that same person who is handling communications during the incident itself should also be publishing the external postmortem or incident review because they should be doing that translation like you're referring to.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. All right, so let's start taking this plane down for a landing. We've covered a lot of ground in a very
A
short period of
lot.
time. So there's a topic that is unavoidable. Everywhere
Oh,
you look
man.
on LinkedIn, everywhere there is the subject of AI. And companies, they're trying to use it to remove as much human effort as possible, including the world of incident response. So this
Including, yeah.
Including, so here's a cat's hot take time. Should AI be involved in incident response in your view? And if so, how?
Yeah. Well, it's a touchy subject, right? My answer at the end of the day is yes. And people will see, if you're following anything that PagerDuty is doing. We just did a little bit of like a product feature launch recently. So if folks want to go read about that, I'd recommend go just kind of check out some of our new releases. You'll see AI mentioned and discussed in those things and some of the things that we're working on. And so bottom line, yes, there are areas where AI does belong in incident response. At the end of the day, this is a very manual process for a lot of us today, and that can be really rough. Incident response is such a cognitive load overall. It's also, it tends to be, it's not always, but it can be at odd hours. And so it's just exhausting from every angle. And if there's anywhere that you can find somewhere to automate or inject a little bit of AI, ooh, I get to put a quarter in the injection jar for the day. It's a buzzword I try not to say. But if
Whoops.
there are areas where you can push a little bit of that into your process in a way that helps you speed things up. So maybe you have some auto remediation that can be done, or maybe you have AI that's learning from past status page updates that you've posted and saying, hey, this looks kind of similar to that other thing. So maybe you want to say something similar here. Helps you get to the messaging a little faster. I'm going to say the thing I always say with AI and any type of creative writing. I was an English major, so I can't help but say this. Always, always, always do a first and second draft review of anything AI writes. Do not put something
Yes.
into ChatGPT and say, hey, write me a status page message, and then just drop that out. And that includes with any product that's producing AI written content. Review it. Make the human edits, make sure it matches your writing voice, especially if you're personally writing something. And just, value the fact that the human written word is one of our greatest accomplishments as a species and that we can't just give it up to AI at the end of the day. That's one of those things. I think where I stop short is when the conversation turns to replacing people in the incident response process. Maybe you won't have someone fill a scribe role. Maybe you'll have an AI transcription of the incident call. That's fine. That doesn't have to be a human person. Often we even combine like the deputy incident commander, the second in command, and the scribe role. And so that just takes some cognitive load off of that person too to say, okay, cool. The transcription is being handled. Great, got it. I can actually focus on helping the incident commander make sure things are getting done. You're not going to replace that incident commander with AI. Like,
No.
it is just not going to happen. And I think the notion that anyone even wants that is a little absurd because, again, we've been talking about how this is someone who is trained in incident response, how
Yes.
not anyone can do this, how your CEO cannot jump in and do this unless, they have decided to become trained in incident response, which is probably not their priority, I'm guessing. Anyone at the business can and should do this, but not anyone can inherently. It takes training, it takes skill building, it takes human-centered skill building, it takes empathy, it takes nuanced and dynamic decision-making skill, and you're not going to hit all of those things with AI. You're just not going to. And I think we can push back and say, oh, maybe it'll get there someday. No, I don't think it will. At the end of the day, there's too much change inherent in an incident response process to say you can put AI in charge of all of the decision making around this process. So I think there is a lot of ambition in how we're talking about AI today, and
Yes.
there are a lot of kind of like big dreams out there that people want. And I would just encourage folks to stay realistic and think about, instead of thinking about AI as a human replacement, which is the error I see made a lot, I would think about it more as a human assist. How can it assist the humans who are already there in the process? What can you do to speed things up for those people? What can you do to reduce any pain or friction they're going through in that process? I gave the transcription example. That's a great one. You know, for example, if you can maybe have it also spit out like a draft status page template, those types of things. You can have it create templates. So you can have it tell you that, hey, this incident happened a while ago and it looks a lot like the one you're having now. Those types of things are all super valuable, where you can either get insight or speed up something that is just kind of like rote, clunky process for your team already. Yeah. But the human replacement angle is what has to go, in my opinion, with how folks are thinking about it.
100% agree with your sentiment. The thing that people forget about AI is that under the hood, AI is matrix mathematics, and matrix mathematics does not have context. There's no context. So there needs to be the human element.
Context is the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I very much resonate with the line that you draw in terms of what AI can assist with.
Yeah, I think
it isn't what it can't do.
Yeah. I think we all heard recently, I won't mention their name directly, but we all know the financial services company that laid off their whole support team or most of their support team, saying we're going to have AI handle it. And they were very proud of it. And they put out a bunch of press releases around it. And everyone in that support community was like, what? That's not something to brag about. And then a few months later, they realized the error of their ways. And I think their leader put out some kind of insight or something on LinkedIn saying, in the age of AI, human skill and human work is going to be the most valuable thing. They changed their tune, basically, after the backlash. And it shouldn't take making a colossal mistake like that to help you realize that that is true. Human skill is going to be the most valuable asset that your company can hone. It is true, even if they got there in an ill-advised way, I would say.
Yeah. Amazing wisdom. So over this conversation, we have probably discussed millions of dollars of savings in business strategy.
Absolutely.
Just from the perspective of support and incident response. So really, really appreciate you being here, Kat, and sharing all of your knowledge with us. Where should people reach you if they're interested in asking you questions or they're curious a bit more about PagerDuty?
Yeah, definitely. I have not been super active on there, but I have a goal to start being active more. I just threw out my former Bird app account for a Blue Sky account. I'll send the link over to you and you can put it in the show notes so folks can reach me. Folks can also find me on LinkedIn. I am the only Kat Gaines at PagerDuty, so I'm pretty easy to find. I have blue hair. If you see that on the profile, you're good to go. That's me. Please connect. Please maybe send a note saying, hey, I heard you on this podcast, so I know who you are. It's not coming out of the blue. Also, go check out some PagerDuty's resources. So we have a number of operations guides on our website that are written by my team, the developer relations team. And they're all about these types of things, about incident response process, about just bettering process and culture. A lot of it is based on our own learnings and kind of pulled from our own internal playbooks around how we do things. So go check out those PagerDuty operations guides, like response.pagerduty.com is a great one to start with. And also, I can't help but plug it again. Go join PagerDuty Commons. That's our community forum at community.pagerduty.com. My team and I hang out in there all the time. Mm-hmm. All kinds of really cool people hang out in there. And we just wanted to make it more of a space for discussion and learning and just bettering of all of our practices so that these things are as easy as possible going forward.
Awesome. Thank you, Kat. It has been a privilege and a joy to host you here. You've shared so much of your experience and knowledge, and I can't wait to hear what people have to say about this topic of incident response and support's role in it.
Yeah, let's keep the discussion going, folks. Please do reach out.
Awesome. Thanks again, Kat. Until next time.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to today's edition of Reliability Rebels. Until next time. Check one, check two. Reliability Rebels.
check one, check two. Check, 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 check